Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for stopping in to listen in. It's always a pleasure to be here with you and to bring some of the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa to the airwaves. Sunny today with a high near 82. Doesn't get much nicer than that. On Tuesday and Tuesday night, there's a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, but by Wednesday and Thursday, sunny skies are expected again with highs near 84 to 86. On Friday, there's a 50% chance of rain expected, but by the weekend, sunny skies and temperatures in the mid-70s are expected. Actually, today is KHOI's official birthday. Over the weekend, there was a block party. Thank you to everybody for coming to celebrate. A book sale also took place, and it is still underway. We still have a lot of really great books here, so stop by for that. Support your community radio station by giving yourself a new book for our birthday. If you have tried to drive through Campus Town on Lincoln Way, starting last night around 6 p.m., you would have run into what the Ames City Police called Lake Lincoln Way. There was a large water main break on Lincoln Way, flooding the area near the union between Lynn and Ash. I drove by there this morning on the way to KHOI just to check and see how things were going, and there is a large hole in Lincoln Way on the westbound part of the street. The eastbound part of Lincoln Way is open again for traffic, but the westbound area between Lynn and Ash is not going to be usable for a while. I asked the Ames City Police, and they said they don't have a date yet on reopening that side of the street. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. It's an impressive hole. Also in Campus Town, all weekend, the remarkable sight of a virtual river of students, many carrying red bags streaming along the sidewalks. Welcome, ISU student. Here is Gail Seiler, who is a professor at Iowa State University, as well as a member of the Local Talk reporting team.
We all know that it's back to school time, and that means that ISU students will be streaming into Ames. Many will be returning students, but some will be students who are new to ISU, either first-year students or transfer students. What many listeners might not know is that ISU puts a great deal of effort into supporting those students as they arrive on campus and throughout their first semester or year. One of the ways they do that is through something called learning communities. This is a national trend becoming more and more common at many universities. So today, we are going to hear more about learning communities at ISU, which have existed for 21 years. I'm speaking with Jennifer Leptine, the Interim Director of Learning Communities at ISU. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
The obvious question to start with is, what is a learning community?
A learning community at Iowa State takes many forms. In general, they involve students taking courses together, so they might take two or three courses in common, and they have upper division students that help them through the first semester or first year at the institution. So this peer mentor will provide opportunities for networking among the students. They'll have activities that they do together. They provide academic support to the students when they're here, get them to campus resources that they need when they first arrive and are unaware of all the different opportunities here on campus for them. So they do courses in common. They have the peer mentor component. And then the other piece that some of our learning communities have is to live in a residence hall together. We have 80 learning communities. And among those 80 learning communities, 20 of them have a residential component. And it's been one of those things where we started out very residential focused, but over time we saw that there was a need for other community models to be brought into the program. And so that's when we started seeing departments wanting to really organize things around their coursework. And so that's where our model has really expanded quite a bit.
And what would you say is the purpose of a learning community?
There are two main concerns that a student has when they come to the university. Number one is, am I going to be able to do this academic work? How am I going to do this? This is a big deal coming to the university. And then the second piece is, will I make friends? And the learning community really is focused on helping students support them academically, to get them support throughout their coursework, to help them form study groups so they can work together, know someone down the hall that's taking their calculus class that they can go and ask questions of, but then also getting to know one another, just to build friendship networks and to get to know faculty, having exposure to hearing about what their potential career options are going to look like, learning from industry professionals who come to the learning communities to talk about what it means to be a chemical engineer out in the corporate world. All of those types of different opportunities exist for the learning community.
And those needs are probably even more important at a large university like Iowa State, I would think.
Definitely. And the benefit, you know, one of the primary benefits is it really does make a large university small. What's nice about it is the peer mentors are typically assigned to a group of anywhere from 10 to 20 students that they're supporting. It really does downsize those large university experiences that they're having that first semester.
Is there evidence for the effectiveness of learning communities?
Yes, there is. One of the things that I would tell you is, number one, anecdotally, we do have a lot of positive feedback just from collected from the students, sharing what their experience is like with their coordinators. We also engage in a peer mentor survey, which allows the students to give feedback about how the peer mentors are doing. And that feedback is always outstanding. We know that our peer mentors are such a big, important component of the learning community process. More concretely, our one-year retention between a learning community student versus a non-learning community student, we have an 8% higher rate of retention in that first year. The average six-year graduation rate is 11% higher. So it's a tremendous benefit for a student to be in a learning community. Most of our learning communities are for first-year students. The biggest challenge that students have coming to the university is making that transition from high school to the university culture. So we see that that's a primary audience to capture. 70% of our first-year full-time students coming into Iowa State are in a learning community. Last year, we had almost 6,000 students in the learning community. 4,300 of those students were first-year students. And then the other 1,600 were students, so it might include some transfer students that have a sophomore classification or junior classification.
So mainly for first year, but some that meet needs of other students.
Yes.
So what are you doing right now? What is your office doing right now to be ready in terms of learning communities?
Centrally, we are providing peer mentor training. This is a big part of my job at the start of the school year. The Monday and Tuesday before classes begin, we always invite our new peer mentors to come to a university-wide training. We do training on a variety of different topics, but it's kind of getting the peer mentors ready for that first week with the students. So what do they need to know to make the work happen and the learning community gel right off the bat? So we talk about things like community building activities and the needs of the incoming class of students and work through different scenarios with them of what they might encounter as a peer mentor in that first month of working with the learning community. So we do that every year centrally. We've got over 200 people registered to come to that event on Monday and Tuesday. The learning communities individually are also gearing up, and so coordinators have been working with their peer mentors to reach out to students before they even come to class and get connected, letting them know, hey, I'm going to be your peer mentor for the year. I just want you to know a little bit about myself. So they'll reach out through different means. They'll use email communication. Some set up Facebook pages for their learning community. Or Twitter accounts. Many of our learning communities will have an opening event before the first day of classes. Some of the examples that we have are some people will have the learning communities gather together on Central Campus and they'll take Sci-Ride to get the students used to the form of transportation we have on campus. And then they'll have the opportunity to kind of do something as a group before that first day of classes because students are nervous. The anxiety increases as classes are coming up and they'll walk students to their classrooms so they can see where their classes are going to be held so they know where they're going on their first week, first day of classes. And they do just fun activities. A lot of them will do a welcome picnic. Some do campus sardines where you have to, it's like a campus-wide hide-and-seek game. So you get to know the different monuments on campus, like the Campanile, where's the Gold Star Hall, you know, all of those types of things. So it's really a wonderful way of kind of getting the community built before the class even happens.
And so students will be here soon. When will students start arriving? New students, first years.
New students will start arriving next week. They'll start moving into the dorms. And so once they're arriving, many of our peer mentors will also go into the residence halls and greet students as they come in and they start moving in. You know, the program continues to grow. And I think, you know, all of the good that comes from being part of the learning community, we know that students want this support. And we know that our coordinators are doing outstanding things. They're the the people on the ground level that know exactly what the needs are of our incoming students, and they're working to support them in every way possible. We look forward to continued growth with the program. I think we've got plenty of potential to add additional learning communities over time, and just look for a variety of different possibilities.
I've been speaking with Jennifer Leptin, the Interim Director of Learning Communities at ISU. Thanks again for being with us. I'm here with Carmen Flagg, who's the coordinator for Connect 4, one of the learning communities in the College of Human Sciences, and she has a student with her who we're also going to speak with, David Mena. So thank you both for being with us. I'll start with you, Carmen. We just heard from Jennifer Leptin, who gave us an overview of learning communities at ISU, but we really wanted to talk specifically about some of the interesting learning communities that exist, and in particular about Connect 4. So tell us what Connect 4 is. I was curious, first of all, about what the name means.
Connect 4 is for our first year incoming students. We are one of very few learning communities that are not connected to a class. So our sessions are volunteer for our students to come to. We focus on our first year multicultural students. This year so far, we have about 48 students signed up to join us in the fall. And Connect 4 stands for connecting students to experiences, to people, to resources, and connecting them for success.
It's for first year students in the College of Human Sciences, and you're particularly appealing to students of color or multicultural students.
Correct. We meet with our students, and like I said, it's all voluntary, but we try to keep it pretty concise. So every other week, we meet for 1 hour. We always try to provide some type of food meal because we ask them to meet from 6 to 7, and we don't want them to have to choose between us and dinner. But we usually have some type of resource. So either we have a speaker come in, or we do some type of education for the students to continue to get them acclimated to campus. We also send out newsletters biweekly to our students to keep them abreast on what's happening across campus, as well as any opportunities for leadership or scholarships. This fall, we will be, we'll tweet every day, Monday through Friday, to just keep our students up to date with things that are happening on campus, mm-hmm. and particularly in the College of Human Sciences. And we also are in the process of figuring out how to, instead of sending reminder emails, to sending reminder texts to our students, because we know that that's a better way to communicate with the students. New this year are field trips. So we are going to take 2 field trips this fall. And
how do they learn about it and decide to join?
That is a great question, Gail. So this summer, David and I have been hard at work meeting individually, one-on-one, with each student and their family. So when they come for orientation during the month of June, encouraging them to join us for Connect 4.
David, what has your overall involvement been in Connect 4?
I first started Connect 4 3 years ago when I was a freshman, and I came from Chicago, Illinois. And so when I started, I got to know people, and I just became more and more friendly, more extroverted, turning a new leaf, I suppose, after high school. In high school, I didn't like to talk to people very much, but it was a lot different when I was diving into a community where I had to talk to people. When I came to the university, I could see that there were different cultures walking around the campus, but the opportunity to interact with those different cultures wasn't very available to me. But through Connect 4, I was able to actually interact with all these different people from different places, with different cultures, with different backgrounds, and actually get to know them and get to talk to them.
So you started as a participant in the learning community. And what's your role now?
So now I am a senior mentor with Connect 4. And so we have the mentees, who are the first year students who will join Connect 4, the mentors, who will be mentoring the mentees as upperclassmen who have already experienced what it's like to transition to the university and can help the mentees, and then the senior mentor, who will be helping the mentors interact with their mentees.
So it's very much students teaching students, almost like different generations each year.
So we're, one of few who provide one-on-one mentors for all of our incoming students. And when David and I were meeting with students this summer, that was one thing that really appealed to a lot of the first-year students, to have a student, upper-class student, that's sort of their own to lead them through their first year at Iowa State.
People might wonder why there would need to be a particular learning community for students of color. Could you say a bit about What is it that's unique about those students' experiences that warrants having something like Connect for them?
Well, many of our students of color are coming from larger, more diverse communities where they're not used to being such a small percentage of the community that they're a part of. So within the College of Human Sciences, students who we consider multicultural students, which are U.S. ethnic minority students, make up about 12% of the students within the college, as well as 12% within the university. So to be able to sort of have that home away from home, a community where, one, they can continue to sort of unpack their own identities, to learn more about themselves. And also, we talk about what it's like to be in a predominantly white institution. Sometimes there can be challenges to transitioning to this new environment. And we want to provide an encouraging and welcoming space for students to be able to navigate the university.
I would like to add the comfort level of communicating with people of color and the university. Connect 4 gives me a chance to recoup, to come back to a place where I can just shed all my extra skin and just, I suppose, peel back the layers to be my true self and, I suppose, communicate in a way that I'm used to, like I was at home.
Last year, our students who participated in Connect 4 had a 3.0 or above grade point average. Also, the biggest thing, I guess, that we hear from our students who are past participants, they want to continue to come back to be mentors because it was a valuable experience to help them in their transition. But then also students say it's a place that sort of gives them the courage to be able to step out and to do other things. That was one of the themes that came through. Students said, you know, I was shy, or it helped me to spread my wings, to step outside of my comfort zone. And they have that confidence about themselves to be in those spaces, that self-assuredness, so that when they do experience microaggressions, which they probably will on campus, they can put it in some context or have a way that they can respond to that that's healthy and comfortable for them.
Because some people, especially as first years, may not know mm-hmm. what microaggressions are, that they're even experiencing them. You know, they might feel something on campus that's maybe stressing them out a little bit, but they can't put their finger on it, but their body knows. Mm-hmm. And their body mm-hmm. is telling them, you know, that something on campus is a little different.
Is there an example of a microaggression that you could provide that might help people understand what it is we're talking about?
One that I hear commonly among students, and I will say specifically in the College of Human Sciences, but not uniquely to the College of Human Sciences, is if students are left to themselves to choose the groups of students that they're going to work with on any particular project, what students of color have reported is that they are not ever chosen for those groups, mm-hmm. that there's this whole having to prove themselves to their peers over time that they are capable enough or smart enough in order to be a part of these groups. So students find themselves constantly sort of left out of the group selection process and having mm-hmm. to sort of navigate what that means for them. So that's one that is very common.
What would you say are some of the challenges that you face in meeting the learning community's goals?
The different challenges that students are going to experience, we are not able to eradicate all of them. I mean, of course, that is our goal as multicultural programs, but it takes time to do that. So students are going to experience microaggressions. They are going to have a professor who may not be culturally sensitive at all. How do we help that student to process through that and heal and still have a great college experience? I'm an alum of Iowa State. David's going to be an alum. And we've had very positive experiences in some ways here at Iowa State. But how do we put that in context with the not positive experiences that we have? And how do we encourage students to continue to move on through some of those tough days? So I would say that would probably be one of our biggest challenges. We can't lift this university up and turn it around mm-hmm. ourselves. So how do we help students to be successful in the current environment?
Sometimes it's easy to forget that a lot of these people of color, students of color, are maybe first-generation students, mm-hmm. and perhaps their parents have never gone through the university process mm-hmm. before. Maybe these students are like me, and they're going through their U-bills on their own. They're taking care of all the paperwork on their own. And when it comes to difficulties that they may have, they're doing it by themselves. They have no support from their family sometimes. And that can be a big stress, even for people who aren't of color. And so I would like to be able to help students in that process and just to be prepared and educated enough to know how to help them and where to direct them if I can't help them myself.
That was Carmen Flagg, the Diversity Coordinator and Multicultural Liaison Officer for the College of Human Sciences, and also the coordinator of Connect 4, one of the learning communities in the college. And with her was David Pena, a dietetics major who will be a senior peer mentor in Connect 4 this year.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. We're more like the way we rock it. So don't stop.
Justin Timberlake, Sunshine in My Pocket, I Can't Stop the Feeling. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg, and we just heard Local Talk reporter Gail Seiler on learning communities at Iowa State University. We're going to spend the rest of today's show with the business community. First, a unique member of the bicycling industry here in Ames, and then John Hall will join us from the Ames Chamber of Commerce.
Ooh, it's something magical. It's in the air, it's in my blood, it's rushing on. I don't need no reason, don't be control. I fly so high, no ceiling when I'm in my zone. Cause I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
We've been talking about bicycles on Local Talk recently for a few days, specifically new ways that bikes are being made more accessible in Ames through various initiatives. Diane and Craig Corson are part of that story. They have evolved their work in the bicycle industry into a unique form of business. Their first business in Ames was two-wheel travel. When they sold that store, today it's known as Bike World, they became a mobile business. Somehow fitting for cyclists, but a truck is involved. Not a food truck, but a bike truck. You may already know the bicycle repairman truck from seeing it around town. Diane Corson stopped by KHOI last week so I could talk to her about the bicycle repairman business. You and your husband, Craig, own Bicycle Repairman, which basically operates out of a truck. Can you describe a little bit how the business works?
When someone needs a repair, they call us or schedule a repair on our website, and we reply, and we will come to them, or they can bring their bike to us. We're doing this as a repairs-only operation. We work on every brand. Of course, we do sell parts that are needed for a repair. We sell accessories, but we differ from a retail bicycle shop in that we don't sell any particular brand of bikes.
So you go to people's private homes and fix the bikes at their houses?
Yeah. We have a truck, which is pretty visible here in town. I've actually been asked how many trucks we have because people seem to, seem to notice it more than once. And the answer is we have one.
What's your specialty in repairing the bikes?
My husband is the bicycle repair man. I change flat tires and do minor adjustments and clean bikes up and answer the phone and schedule appointments. And I also manage our website.
So you're the business manager?
Exactly.
You enjoy doing it?
Oh, yeah. We certainly wouldn't be doing this for more than 30 years if we didn't like it. We've actually owned bike shops in Iowa Falls and here in Ames.
What bike shop did you own in Ames?
We owned two-wheel travel downtown, but we reached a point where it was time for us to get out of the retail business. And this has been a real interesting way to stay active in the bike community. It's fun.
You must see a lot of different scenarios.
We get to know their dogs. We get to know where they put the bike if they aren't home, and we can come and pick it up. Mm-hmm. So we've developed a lot of very loyal people that call us over and over again. Mm-hmm. They trust us to go into their garage and get the bike out sometimes. We definitely get to know our customers better than we would if we were just meeting them in the store. And that's mm-hmm. part of the fun of this. That's part of what we enjoy most about it.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI, where we bring you the voices of your neighbors, and some of them are unique business people like the Corsons, who own the Bicycle Repairman. But Diane and Craig Corson are not just innovative members of the bicycle industry. They have a mission to make bicycles accessible to people all over town, even people who can't afford bicycles, and they have expanded their business into a community-building force. It started with a call from Target. Here's Diane Corson.
We got a call about a year and a half ago from the warehouse manager at Target here in Ames, and she had been very disturbed because bicycles that they got in for their inventory that had been damaged in shipping were simply put into the crusher and sent to the landfill. So we got a call from the lady at Target, and she said she had these bikes and asked us if we would be interested in working with them. We agreed to accept these damaged bikes from Target and repair them as necessary and then pass them along to people in the community who could use them.
Target contacted you. How did that happen?
Well, actually, the lady from Target said that she'd called several other places. Retail stores are just simply too large and too busy, particularly in the summer, mm-hmm. to be able to take this on. And I understand that, having been a retailer myself. We're a little more flexible. We don't have set hours. If we answer the phone, why, we take the call and we schedule the work. So we did have available slots when we could do this. Because we're a little bit more flexible, we're not a traditional business with regular hours. That works well for both us and for Target. So we've been able to take these damaged bikes and fix them up. We kind of jumped at the opportunity because every once in a while we know of people who need bikes for transportation, kids particularly that are in need of bikes and couldn't afford to buy them. We've since developed a similar relationship with North American Cycles, which is a wholesale firm here in Ames. So one of our missions in our business is to keep bikes out of the landfill if we possibly can. We try to repair them and get them back to people who can ride them. When I think of keeping 24 bikes out of the landfill, that's a pretty significant amount, you know, for a small business like ours. So it makes us feel pretty good because we've been able to do something that we wanted to be able to provide.
It's wonderful service you're doing.
Last year, we were able to donate close to 24 bikes to the Boys and Girls Club. And they just had an event a couple of weeks ago where they gave these away to kids who needed bikes to get to school. So that was pretty exciting for us. And we've been able to provide them for homeless folks who needed them to be able to get jobs, people coming out of the correction system who needed a bike in order to get to a job. Mm-hmm. So we don't just hand them out wholesale to anybody who comes and asks for one. These are bikes that go to people who we know really need them and will use them and take care of them.
How do you find out who needs bicycles?
Well, we started by calling the Boys and Girls Club. And we actually had to work a little bit to convince them that we were serious. They don't want stuff that looks old and beat up. We had to work a little bit to convince them. But when we took the first load of bikes in and the Boys and Girls Club mm-hmm. had a chance to see what we were offering to them, why, then they got pretty excited and were willing to partner with us. It's been a good partnership ever since. We've been able to provide something that they need.
Now, you mentioned there's other groups. Are you finding out who needs bicycles, or do people come to you by now?
We did approach the homeless shelter mm-hmm. and talk with Vic Moss. You know, if he had someone that had genuine need of transportation so that he could get to a job mm-hmm. or something like that, to contact us. And the same thing with primary care. We've worked with the Free Medical Clinic here in town because they have contact with the low-income community. That also has worked out. Mm-hmm. But the word kind of spreads. People come to us on a fairly regular basis, and so far we've been able to find homes for all of the bikes that we've received.
I'm speaking with Diane Corson, who, together with her husband, Craig Corson, owns Bicycle Repairman, which is a mobile bike repair business for private citizens, but also takes damaged bicycles from Target and North American Cycles and recycles them and donates them to people that need bicycles who might not be able to afford them. How does it happen that a business like Target ends up having a bicycle that is damaged?
I think particularly when they receive large quantities, you know, of something mechanical, something like a bike, there's always the possibility that something has happened to it along the way. It's been dropped or it's been hit by a forklift. Most of the bikes that we get in have got pretty simple problems. A flat tire, broken spokes, a wheel's bent. It's usually not anything real major. If a bike does have real major damage, the only thing we can do is strip the usable parts off of it. And if we can use those ourselves, we do. Otherwise, we pass them along to the Des Moines Bicycle Collective.
This is really a way of converting a business and a technical skill into a social service. Why did you and your husband decide to do this?
Well, it just fell into our laps, to be real honest about it. We didn't think about it, other than the fact that we have a mission statement on our website, which says that one of the things we strive to do is to keep bikes out of the landfill. We don't like seeing them taken to the crusher and just disposed of if there's still some useful life left in them.
So you're a social service for bicycles.
Well, I guess we are. Yeah, I guess we are, you know.
Anyway. I'm just kidding. Obviously, it's for the people that could use them, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. We ride bikes ourselves, and we always have. We see the value of bikes as transportation, not just as a toy or as a recreational item. You know, they have real utility. They have real value as a way of getting around town.
Bicycle is a thing of value.
A very simple, very efficient way to move yourself around. It doesn't burn any gas. You're the motor. You know, if this solves a transportation problem for somebody, why we like to promote that.
In your experience in doing this, what is most memorable to you?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's hard to think of just one thing. Last week, talking to Johnny Willis at the Boys and Girls Club about the fact that they had had their Christmas in July event the day before. And this is an event that they have every year. They work with these young adults and kids starting at age 6 and up through the teen years. And as they work with them over the summer, they get an idea about what each of them needs. And the Christmas in July event is a time when they give away something to each child depending on what he needs. And Johnny said that last week they gave away 22 bikes. The man, he said that most of them came from us. And that really made me feel like we're doing something here.
Last winter, we recorded, you know, memorable mm-hmm. Christmas stories. And I would say more than half of the stories involved a bicycle.
I think everybody's got a story about their first bike. When we opened our first shop in Iowa Falls, just as a joke, my husband put a line on his business card that said, "Your first bicycle discussed." And people would come in and tell him about the first bike they got with such fondness. And clearly they had such good memories about it.
Do you think a lot of the bikes you give away are first bikes?
Very often the first bike is one that was outgrown. And we'll see, you know, kids that are almost 6 feet tall still trying to ride a little child-sized 20-inch bike because that's what they've got.
So then you're able to give them a right-sized bicycle?
That's the idea. Mm-hmm. That's the idea. We try hard to do that. We do this because we genuinely enjoy it and we really want to see more people riding bikes. You know, that's important to us. I think it's good for the environment. It's good for the community. It's just good for everybody.
So you're a local business giving back?
We're trying to.
That was Diane Corson from the Bicycle Repairman. The website for the Bicycle Repairman is bikerepman.com. BIKEREPMAN.com. Let me spell that again. BIKEREPMAN.com. BikeRepMan.com. Diane emphasized during the interview that if you have a bike that you don't have any use for
and is sitting in your garage gathering dust, Diane and Craig would very much welcome your donating the bike for this bike project. Bikes that don't find a home in Ames will go to Des Moines Bicycle Collective, which would give them to a person in Des Moines who's in need of a bicycle as well. You can also call Diane and Craig at 515-232-8232. That's 515-232-8232. And again, their website is bikerepman.com. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. John Hall is here with me from the Ames Economic Development Commission to talk about construction around Ames. John is also the Business Development Coordinator for the City of Ames. John, you are here partly this morning to talk about development in Ames, cranes over Ames.
Yep.
And it's been pointed out that if you can see a lot of cranes in a community, it tells you a lot about the economic development in that town. So yep. Let's talk about the cranes over Ames.
Absolutely. There's just been a huge number of projects that Ames has been seeing over the past, many years. I've been now with the Ames Economic Development Commission in the City of Ames now for just over 6 months. And in my time, I know we detail in the recent article that was put out about four cranes, but I think I've seen upwards of 10 to 12 cranes in that 6 months,
mm-hmm.
which is incredible growth for a town of our size, really, when you think about it and compare ourselves to other communities that just really aren't seeing that kind of investment.
Where are the cranes currently?
There's two on Iowa State's campus. They're putting together the Biosciences Center for Advanced Teaching and Research. That's a mouthful of a title for that building.
Now, the Biosciences Center for Advanced Teaching and Research, that's the building that's going up where the old veterinary barn used to be. Is that right? At Stang and Pamel Drive?
Yeah, Stang and Pamel. It's on the west side of that drive, so the barns are still back there,
but that used to be the building where they had the animals.
Yes.
I know that because we used to go and look at the sick animals.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite buildings as a kid.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, it's that's where that building's going to go, and that'll be a unique building to what Iowa State's really trying to push with the biosciences and biotechnology. It'll just be one more feather in their cap for
what is bioscience?
Bioscience is really using there's a whole field of it. Really, what Iowa State focuses on is really within the ag sciences and ag technology for biosciences. So it's using a lot of bio-based products, so things that spin off of soy or wheat or corn, and using it in new and unique ways.
Hmm.
So that's a lot of the work that we actually partner with the Cultivation Corridor, which is an affiliation where between Ames and Des Moines and all of the chambers and economic developments between here and there. To really focus on recruiting businesses that are in that sphere, that biotech and bioscience field, because we've got such a strong presence with Iowa State University. We've got such a natural stock of corn and corn stover and soy that it makes sense for a lot of those companies to locate here, or at least locate R&D facilities on or near Iowa State or Iowa State Research Park.
Well, it sounds like a subject for a whole radio show.
Oh, yeah. No, we could talk about that for a long time.
Okay, so let's talk about another crane.
Some of the other cranes, we've got the Ames Water plant, the water treatment plant.
That's out on 13th Street?
Out on 13th Street. Mm-hmm. That's a big project, still coming along, but that's a, what, $52.5 million investment, which in a community the size of Ames, they're really looking for the future of Ames with this
project.
And
completion date?
It'll be spring of next year, so hopefully. It's a big project, and it's going to take them nearly 3 years to complete when it's all said and done. So that's been a big one. Looking to other cranes, the Eastgate Business Park has a new office building going up for the Greater Iowa Credit Union.
Where is that?
If you know where Pizza Ranch is at, it's on 13th Street as well, on the north side, so kind of tucked behind Child Serve there, mm-hmm. between Child Serve and BASF.
And that will be the third building for the Greater Iowa Credit Union, I think, in Ames.
Yeah, I believe so. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So they're making a pretty sizable investment in a building up there. So a lot going on.
I mean, and I've also been seeing cranes at Mary Greeley Medical Center.
Yep. And I think all the cranes are off their site now. They're still working up, putting the final touches on their main entry and the rotunda there.
In the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. I actually had the opportunity to tour that building just a couple weeks back, and it's really spectacular, the amount of work and the thought behind everything they've done, where it's really about patients and patient care from the moment you walk in the door.
So you're saying essentially that Ames is experiencing a growth spurt?
Oh, absolutely. And I think anybody who's been in Ames for the past few years knows that that we've been in a growth spurt. It's a great time to be in Ames, a great time to be doing what we do here in Ames. We can only hope that it continues that way from the campus and university growing as rapidly as they are to world-class businesses growing and expanding here in Ames. I mean, there's just a huge demand on workers and need for more workers and more folks to move to town. And we see that with housing developments going on where people are buying up houses as soon as they're available. Ames is a great place to be right now.
So what you're describing is quite a bit of momentum.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Do you have an explanation of what's driving that momentum? Is it specific things, or would you say it's more a synergy of just a lot of pieces? Or
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. So I think right now the state of Iowa is seeing a lot of growth in that direction. We're seeing a lot of businesses growing and expanding and hiring here in Iowa. We're able to be on the cutting edge of the bioscience and biotech industry, which is rapidly becoming one of the biggest industries in the country. With Iowa so poised and ready to go on it, that creates a unique market for us to really take advantage of and puts a lot of strain on the existing workers. So we're seeing a challenge with recruiting to the workforce, but we're just seeing this combination of a thriving economy and a strong ag economy. Even though farmers, the ag economy is a little soft, the other side of it, the biotech and biosciences are still seeing a lot of growth and a lot of strength. So we're just seeing the culmination of all of this. Plus, the university is growing at unprecedented rates and continues to grow, which is putting a huge strain on all the services. But it's great growth. Those folks come here, they spend money here, and hopefully they'll stay here and work here after they graduate.
As I understand it, Ames actually does not have enough of an unemployment problem, that it has more jobs than it has people that can fill them.
Yeah. So Ames actually got ranked as the lowest unemployment in the country the early spring with a 1.8% unemployment rate. And typically what you want to see in a community is about a 2% unemployment rate. Mm-hmm. That just accounts for people transitioning jobs and people seeking out better paying and higher paying jobs. So if you are a job seeker right now, it's a great time to be out there. Your ability to move up is pretty good. But if you're looking to hire jobs, it can be a little challenging. So we actually brought on Angie Dorenkamp in our office, who is focusing on workforce solutions and what we can do to better the workforce situation here in Ames. Part of it's got to be on the private side with more housing and more housing options. Part of it's got to be on the public side with recruitment campaigns and efforts to try and rebrand Ames as not just a university town, but a town where the folks who live here and the students can really come together and have that synergy where we've got a great town and gown relationship. And just trying to showcase that to folks that don't currently live in Ames or may have at one point lived in Ames or have some tie to the state or to the community, and trying to bring them back and letting them know that there's a job here for you. If you want to come back here and work in just about any field, we've got opportunities for you, mm-hmm. and good paying opportunities.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the Crane projects. Before we move on, any other areas of development that you think that are noteworthy?
Well, I mean, I think you point to any direction of town and you're going to see huge investments and huge development projects that are going on. I mean, out in West Ames, we've got two new multi-use buildings that are I think the final one's still being bricked, but those are going to be offer great new commercial spaces and some more living opportunities for folks above those commercial spaces. We've got a new restaurant out in West Ames. There's a new sports tennis practice facility going up in Southwest Ames on South Dakota. You go to South Ames, the research park, seeing huge development, huge buildings going up. The ISU core facility, economic core facility, just came online.
Speaking of Campus Town real briefly, mm-hmm. Kingland had initially had some concern about being able to fill its storefront properties. Do you know how that's going for them?
It's a slow process, but with anything like that, it's always going to be a slow process because of the build-out time and the negotiations that have to take place. But in my recent conversations with most of the building owners and the folks that are representing the building owners down in the Kingland building as well as the other buildings that have been going up, they're finding tenants. Mm-hmm. Filling those spaces takes time, but like anything, there's always going to be a turnover, but I think we're going to find that they're going to be pretty full, mm-hmm. and the students are going to have a lot of opportunities to take advantage of some new businesses to the area.
And speaking of construction sites, what is Walmart doing out north of town? What is going on there? They've made a big hole in their parking lot.
Yeah, so they tore down the old Cub Foods, old Dolls building, and they're actually going to put up a new Super Walmart up there. Just to better serve the demands of some of the folks up in North Ames. So that's actually going to be facing south rather than the current building, which is facing east. So it's going to face south there. And then once that building is complete and ready to go, they'll tear down their old building and build a parking lot out front. So it's going to be a multi-phase project. I'm not sure the completion date on it, but it'll be a big new project up in North Ames there.
And Hy-Vee is also planning to
start the Hy-Vee Lincoln Center. They're going to be doing some updates to their building and some renovations to their buildings. I haven't actually seen the plans for that one, so I'm not 100% sure what it's going to look like. But my understanding is they're really just going to pump some dollars in and do a pretty big renovation. And the West Ames Hy-Vee saw that a couple years back. Was under construction for quite a few months while they were seeing a kind of an update and a facelift to the building. And I think that's going to be what we see here with the Lincoln Center one.
Oh, lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about this for...
I do remember a time when there was concern about being able to attract businesses to mm-hmm. Ames, so this is really a little bit of a change.
Yeah, well, and it really takes focusing our efforts. You know, my role is pretty much to recruit businesses to Ames. It works anywhere from small mom and pop shops on up to large corporations with, you know, 500 plus employees. But the recruitment game is really understanding what our market can offer. We'd all love, and when I say we, us in the economic development profession would all love to land that next, you know, 500 tech jobs, you know, high paying, great company. But the truth is Ames isn't really poised to land most of those big corporations right now because we've got a workforce shortage. You know, we can't mm-hmm. support that.
One of the services you offer is helping businesses come to Ames,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And also to help existing businesses. Do you also offer assistance to local people who want to develop businesses?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my role is really any business who wants to get a start here in Ames. So I work with small companies or individuals who really want to get started. A lot of them don't even know where to turn. We've got great resources here in Ames. The Small Business Development Center has a regional presence here. They're great for helping you put together a business plan and formulate your business and really put the numbers to the paper so that you understand, okay, if I'm going to start, what am I going to need? Because it's not just as simple as going and renting a space and opening up. A lot of times you'll need a loan or you know, some kind of financial security there to be able to get your products and open your storefront and get everything really ready for what you're looking for. So we have a great relationship with the Small Business Development Center and them helping us get businesses better situated to be more successful.
So the Small Businesses Development Center, that's a public service?
Yes, Small Business Development Center, yep. It's a statewide organization. Ted Baer is the regional director here, and they're actually housed out at the Economic Core facility down in the research park. So, but anybody can take advantage of the services and work with Ted down there, and he's been great to work with. And then when they have a more developed business or as they're going through this process, that's really where we can help them out with finding a location that's going to be successful. We can run demographic reports so that they can understand really what the market looks like around them. If they are targeting a specific market, we can help them find an ideal location that that they're going to be able to reach that market in. So that's really where we focus.
We're speaking with John Hall, who's Director of Business Development for the Ames Economic Development Commission. I'm curious, John, what do you think is missing? Your job is to, you know, bring business in, help business grow in the area.
You know, that's,
do you have a feeling that do you feel like something's missing?
That's always the million-dollar question, because as soon as I point to something that's missing, somebody else points out something else that's missing, and I can be over there. You know, I think there's a few things that that we would love to see happen in Ames. You know, a lot of folks talk about how a lot of the redevelopment projects we're seeing down in Campus Town are pushing out the small businesses and those kinds of things. And those are the ones that I want to be in contact with. I think there's a way we can help them locate in Ames, relocate in Ames, work in a new space in Ames. A lot of those businesses have taken the opportunity to retire out of it. But we keep We continue to hear, you know, well, all these businesses are getting pushed away, and I think there's an opportunity for keeping them and working with them. So I'm always curious to work with those folks.
You have a concern about keeping local business talent
absolutely
alive.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of folks feel that way. You know, it's always great to have investment from large national chains. I mean, they do very well. A lot of college students feel comfortable going to chains that they may have been around when they were at home. But folks who are local to here to Ames, and a lot of the college students too, like to go to local places, unique places that only exist in Ames, where you can't find that product or that service anywhere else. And that's really what our job is to help foster beyond just the national chains. The national chains, it's easy. You know, we call them up. They're either interested or they're not, and we help them find a location. It's the local shops that take a little bit more work, but that's what we've got these services here in Ames for, is to provide them support and make sure that they can be successful. They may have been in a location for 30 years and it's going to get torn down and redeveloped, but that doesn't mean that they have to close up shop or even that they're going to have to leave. You know, the rents may be higher, but the influx of new population in that area makes a big difference. I think specifically right now of the River Caddis project, which is 2700 block of Lincoln Way, it's still being
which block is that?
That's where the Swift stops at.
We're talking about Campus Town or
downtown? Campus Town, just to the west of the Dunkin' Donuts. There's that whole block up there has Arcadia Cafe. Mm-hmm. There's a nail salon and a Chinese restaurant. Yep, and that block is currently going through City Council looking for approval to redevelop the whole block. And a lot of the businesses are moving or closing, and they're concerned about the future high rents to that building. Well, you've got a developer who wants to have local businesses present, so he's willing to work with them. But you've also got a situation where there's going to be upwards of 400 new students living right above their business. So they've got a huge influx of population coming to that area, as well as students like to, and community community members like to go to new buildings and new businesses and visit those. So
that block just west of Sheldon Avenue, that
between
will,
Sheldon and Highland.
Right. That will have a new building going up. From what you're saying, it sounds like it's going to be a high rise.
Yeah. Yep. So that's currently going through City Council right now. It's going to be a huge investment into the community. So, and hopefully we'll be able to attract some more local businesses to that development.
We're speaking with John Hall, Director of Business Development for the Ames Economic Development Commission, and you're also the Business Development Coordinator for the City of Ames. And I got so carried away listening to you that I see we've run out of time. So I would like you to come back sometime and explain kind of your dual role of both working for the Chamber of Commerce and for the City of Ames.
Absolutely.
But we have run out of time today, so thank you for coming.
Yeah, no
and
worries.
And come back sometime and we'll talk about that too.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you for coming. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, and earlier today we spoke with Diane Corson from the Bicycle Repairman. Also, KHOI reporter Gail Seiler spoke with the learning communities folks at ISU, Carmen Flagg. We also had David Pina and Jennifer Leapton, who's the interim director of learning communities at Ames at Iowa State University. Local Talk is on at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also hear today's entire show on our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Bell of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Sunshine in My Pocket by Justin Timberlake and The Beginning of Die Meistersinger by Richard Wagner. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. And please stop by and see our book sale, which is still going on. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.